Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Hey, everybody. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back for another hour at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We got a great man with us, a longtime leader of the D.C. statehood movement, the first elected representative from the state of Douglas, Charles Moreland. Charles, you with us?
I'm with you, Harvey, and happy
to
be here.
All right, man. You are indeed. We may be joined hopefully soon by Joel Siegel. And at the half hour, we're going to talk with the great Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear about nuclear power and the current state of the attempt of the Biden administration to bail it out. Quite disturbing and really annoying when you get right down to it. But for this half hour, we're going to be with Charles Moreland talking to us from the state of Douglas. Charles, where are we at now with D.C. statehood? What is the latest news? We're going to talk about voting rights as well. And, of course, we're going to talk about the great upcoming series of events. We have August 27th to 30th for D.C. statehood, Green Jobs and Justice, shaping up to be quite an amazing event. And, Charles, you are at the cutting edge of that, so we want you to fill us in. But let's start with D.C. statehood. Where are we at with it, brother? And what can people who are listening to this show do to further the cause of D.C. statehood?
Well, thank you so much again, Harvey, for inviting me, and thank you for all that you do in so many areas. D.C. statehood, I'd like to say that today marks the beginning of the last chapter in our 220-year struggle for freedom and justice. Our dream is to become the 51st state in the United States of America. Our new state will be called Washington Douglas Commonwealth. And Douglas represents Frederick Douglass, the famed abolitionist, and we would be the first state named after an African American. And where we are is we're closer than we've ever been. The House has passed H.R. 51, and the Senate has had a hearing. But close doesn't count. 99.5 won't do. We've been close before. And so our goal is to stand up and demand statehood, demand our rights, because that has been the missing ingredient. The citizens of Washington, D.C. are now poised and prepared, and we're organizing to stand up, and we are forming a coalition. We call it a three-issue alliance, designed to, one, end taxation without representation by making Washington, D.C. America's 51st state. We are organizing with green organizations to promote green jobs and social justice organizations all around the country to demand social justice. And we've decided that the best way to do that, to launch that, is to commemorate the 1963 March on Washington for jobs and freedom. We're going to have a number of events on August the 28th of this year, and that's the 58th anniversary of that march. Where Martin Luther King, of course, made his famous I Have a Dream speech. Our dream is statehood. And we're going to start off on Friday evening, on August the 27th, with a Martin Luther King Awards banquet. And on Saturday, we're going to have three events. We're going to start off at Freedom Plaza at 8:30 in the morning. And from Freedom Plaza, we're going to march and join up with the National Action Network. And we're also going to have a D.C. statehood event. All of our speakers are going to talk about the three issues: D.C. statehood, green jobs, and social justice. And I believe that D.C. statehood is at the vanguard right now of the movement, because if we had two senators from the District of Columbia right now in the Senate, we would not have to worry about Joe Manchin and Sinema holding the Democratic Party hostage and holding up the filibuster. So D.C. statehood is very important, and I've from discussions with people all across the country, everybody agrees that certainly D.C. statehood is a no-brainer. Historically, we've had support from Democrats and Republicans as well for the proposition that there should be no taxation without representation in the United States, and not in the nation's capital. So that's where we are on that weekend. We're also going to have a rally in front of the White House, and that's going to be led by the D.C. veterans for D.C. statehood, and veterans from all across the country are going to be coming to that march. Now, on Sunday, we're going to have a prayer breakfast. That's on the 29th of August. And then on Monday, we're going to have an event that we're calling Turn the White House Green. And, of course, Harvey, he's the leader of that effort. And we're going to have companies and organizations proposing to make it possible for the White House to have solar panels and go green. And on Monday, also, we're going to have what we're calling the National Justice Roundtable. So that's a summary, Harvey, of what we're planning on August the 28th. As I said earlier, we see it as a turning point. Either we're going to stand up for green job justice, D.C. statehood, and righteousness, or we're going to lay down and continue to accept injustice. And we're going to stand up.
Charles Morning, you're a great organizer, a great inspiration. How do people get a hold of you, and how do people find out about this these events at the end of August?
We have a website. It's www.douglascommonwealth.us. And Douglas is spelled with two S's, I'm sorry. D-O-U-G-L-A-S-S, commonwealth.us. And so you go to the events page, and you'll see all the events that we have scheduled. We also have a link that will allow you to sign up and donate, volunteer. So that's, again, www.douglascommonwealth.us, Douglas with two S.
Well, it's fantastic. And, of course, we've been a lot of the organizing for this started out at our Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom calls, which we podcast on this show every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern time. Charles, you've been a mainstay on that. You've been bringing in the D.C. statehood issue in great ways. And this is a big deal. Our grief phone calls, Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition, and we'll resume broadcasting those after show slot next week. That you can find at electionprotection2024.org. Electionprotection2024.org is where you find the Zoom calls. They're every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern time, and then we rebroadcast them on this slot every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern, and we'll be doing that next week. But we got a great break here to have Charles Moreland with us. Charles, tell us why D.C. statehood is so important, and also tell us about your role. You were the first elected representative, but you weren't allowed to vote in Congress. Is that right?
Yes. In 1990, I was elected as D.C.'s first United States representative at the same time that Jesse Jackson and Senator Florence Pendleton were elected to the Senate. But, Harvey, let me mention before I say another word how important you have been to the evolution and advancement of our cause. Let it be written and let it be known, Harvey, that when you brought us the idea of having a commemorative march on August the 28th, it really, really lit up the movement. I mean, when we look at where we are now, what we're planning now, the National Action Network is coming along with us, Greenpeace, but it all came from the idea that you brought. And as you know, you and Joel and I, we worked and we brought a whole lot of people. So, you know, everybody ought to know, Harvey, that you put the spark and the life in that we see now in this movement. Now,
well, of course, now that you've laid my name on it, we got to have a great event here. And you've been having tremendous success coordinating with Al Sharpton and a rally that he had called already earlier. Can you tell us about that and what's going on the 28th? Sounds really exciting.
Yeah, the National Action Network had planned to have a big event at the Lincoln Memorial to commemorate, the 1963 March. And last week they reached out to us when they realized that we had a number of events planned at key venues and key locations. And we've been negotiating with them even this morning we had conversations and discussions with Reverend Toon, and we're going to continue our discussions at 2:30. But they have agreed to be co-sponsors. And we're going to be on the they're going to be on the same application. But of course, one of the things we're asking from them is that they expand the reach and scope of their march to include DC statehood and green jobs, along with all of their various justice issues. And they've agreed to do that. So we are still working out the details on that, but again, Harvey, I say we certainly appreciate your energy and your genius, quite frankly, in what you brought to the table here.
So let's run through the events on Friday, August 27th. You are putting on a banquet. And you're going to honor a number of activists and great people in this country. And it'll be a good a way to get people together and get them rolling for the weekend. And what is the focus of that dinner going to be?
Well, we're going to give what we call the Martin Luther King Justice Award in a number of areas. Not just D.C. State, of course. We're going to recognize all of the pioneers of D.C. State who are going back to D.C. voting rights and self-determination. But we're also going to recognize the proponents and advocates and leaders like yourself, Harvey, of environmental justice issues. So we're going to give awards to the pioneers and today's leaders as well. And then, of course, we're going to look at the people on the front lines fighting voter suppression and standing up on all the various justice issues. The natural course of injustice is that people who are oppressed will remain oppressed until they stand up against their oppressor. So our goal this week on that weekend is to take a stand. And I keep emphasizing that, take a stand. I just had a discussion on Monday, which happened to be my 73rd birthday.
Congratulations. And,
thank you. And I was talking to a number of young people, trying to make them understand that given the mix of critical issues that, quite frankly, are not just a threat, but you know, it's really a threat to our existence as you know, as a society, as you know, civilization as we know it. And there are so many people that are just sitting on the sidelines.
No, we can't have that.
Not only do they don't know what to do, but they don't realize that everybody must do something.
Well, in D.C. right now, we have over 700,000 people who do not have representation in the Congress, and that includes my sister, my niece, my nephew, and my grandnieces and nephew. And so I have a personal interest in this beyond the average. And the idea that you, Charles, among the 700,000 people are second-class citizens without representation, I mean, basically, D.C. is a colony. And it's ridiculous to allow that to happen. We also are putting forward the idea that D.C., Douglas Commonwealth, needs to be 100% renewable in terms of energy. And we want to start with the White House. We want to make the White House a greenhouse. And, you know, that's what we want to do. And it absolutely should happen. And, of course, we want justice, economic justice and social justice. And we're seeing now, Charles, and we talk about this on our grief calls every week, that the Republicans are just trying to close out our democracy. It's amazing what they're doing. You feel it doubly, because even if you get the ability to vote, which they're trying to take away, you don't even have a chance as a senator or a congressman.
Exactly. Harvey, you said it. I mean, exactly right. D.C., the citizens of D.C. are subjected to taxation without representation, which is tyranny in its most shameful form. D.C. residents have all the duties and responsibilities of American citizenship, paying taxes, subjected to service in the Army, all the duties and responsibilities of American citizenship, yet we are denied the rights to representation in Congress. We're denied self-determination in governing our own affairs. Those are rights that are fundamental to democracy. In a democracy, people making decisions for themselves, spending their own resources for their own best interests, are presumed to be more capable and better motivated to find solutions to their problems than even the most well-intended dictator. Well, every member of Congress is our dictator. Under the home rule system of government that they have imposed on D.C., any member of Congress can stop or veto any bill that's passed in the District of Columbia. And that has a chilling effect on our D.C. Council. Every rule, every bill, every piece of legislation that they pass is subjected to congressional review. So what the system, they call the system home rule. Well, home rule is not democracy. It is dictatorship of the powerful over the powerless. From a distance, Harvey, to other Americans, it looks like D.C. residents participate in the American democratic process. But home rule resembles democracy about as much as a long-headed mule resembles a thoroughbred horse. And the closer you get to it, when you get here, Harvey, and you look at this system, you'll see that D.C. citizens have no rights in a union of states. Any entity that is not a state has rights inferior to the states. If you're a territory, absolutely, of your possession or a district, your rights are inferior. So we have inferior rights. But in D.C., as opposed to the territories and the possessions, they don't have all the duties and responsibilities of citizenship. Washingtonians do. There's no reason, there's no justification for it. If you took this system of government and tried to impose it on anybody else in any other state, in fact, if you tried to impose this system of government anywhere in the world, they would pick up arms and shoot you dead, just like the founding fathers of this nation did. It's time for that to end.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you have more people in D.C. than you have in Wyoming or Vermont.
Exactly.
And I do believe there may be a car dealership in D.C. I don't know. I mean, and there may be a dump in D.C. I don't know. But it did have a huge impact on the ability of people to deal with the insurrection on January 6th. You didn't have a governor that could have called out the National Guard. I mean, that's a big deal. People died because of that.
Exactly. And that's just go ahead, Harvey.
I think it'll happen again, too. That's the big worry.
It is certainly capable of repetition, especially if some of the folks out there get control of the government again. And that's another reason why we need D.C. statehood. As I mentioned earlier, if we had two Democratic senators, then we could safely dismiss with the filibuster. In fact, the filibuster, there shouldn't be any confusion about getting rid of the filibuster. The filibuster imposes minority control over our government. There's not a filibuster system anywhere else, not in the House. It's not in any. They don't have filibuster rules in any state, in any city. The United States Senate is the only legislative body in the world that I know of where you have a rule that's not a law that gives the minority control over the majority. It's undemocratic. It does not make sense. And for those Democrats who want to hold on to that system, to me it's baffling, it's confusing, because that filibuster system has never produced anything positive or progressive in the history of this country.
No, and not only is it a filibuster, which is allows a majority of the Senate to vote for something and still not pass, but it also have a situation where the Republican senators in the Senate represent 42 million fewer people than the Democrats because of the nature of the Senate. And it's a double whammy. Not only do you have to get 60 votes, but the 50 Republicans are completely in the minority already in terms of how many people they represent. It's just outrageous. And, of course, Mitch McConnell is making the most of it and killing all the progressive legislation and even some of the not-so-progressive legislation that he can't get his hands on. It's outrageous.
Well, Harvey, why is Joe Biden beholden and so enamored with the filibuster? I don't understand that.
No, I don't either. And the, you know, these two Democrats, the woman from Arizona, and the Joe Manchin. I mean, it's just a game they're playing, and you know, it's utterly outrageous. We're talking with the great Charles Moreland from D.C., the first elected U.S. representative from the District of Columbia, now soon to be called the Douglas Commonwealth. We're talking about upcoming events, August 27th, 8th, 9th, and 30th in D.C., a banquet Friday night, major marches Saturday with Al Sharpton and other organizations, a prayer breakfast on Sunday, a roundtable on Monday, followed by a delivery to the White House of at least one solar panel. And we want to make the White House a greenhouse. And Charles, tell us again how people can get in touch with you and how they can become a part of these events.
Go to our website. It's www.douglascommonwealth.us. And that's Douglas with two S's, D-O-U-G-L-A-S-S, commonwealth.us.
Yeah, it's these events are really shaping up, very exciting. And join us at our Monday Zoom calls, which we do rebroadcast in this slot, Monday at 5 Eastern Time. Go to the Election Protection 2024.org website. Email me directly if you like, solartopia@gmail.com, solartopia@gmail.com, and we will get you in and be glad to have you there. So, Charles, these laws that these gerrymandered state representatives, state legislatures are passing are really getting very, very serious now. I mean, it's a really all-out assault on the right to vote, and it's an all-out representation of what a democracy really can be. What, in addition to D.C. statehood, what can we do to win back the vote and make sure that we have an actual democracy come 2022 and 24?
Well, Harvey, we need to sound the alarm, and so that people in voters in every state can get mobilized and understand how important it is for us to defeat the Republicans who would essentially take away not just the right to vote, but the power of the vote. What they're trying to do is, and I understand that there are 20 state legislatures right now in states where they're trying to give governors and individual Republicans the power to decide which votes they will accept, decide if they will accept the outcome of a vote. So this is more than just voter suppression. And it's frightening almost to see the extent to which the Republicans are willing to go to essentially completely disenfranchise Americans, and so that anybody that's not a Republican. I mean, so we need to organize on every level. One of the things I talk about all the time is how do we get the message out to all Americans that when you're talking about disenfranchising a few, it's not just minorities that you're disenfranchising. And, Harvey, we've talked about this a lot. And the message is very important. We need to find a way to stop the division, to form a united front, so that, you know, all disadvantaged people and everybody who would be disenfranchised by the voter suppression laws get to unify all of us, and mostly poor people, poor blacks, poor whites, poor Hispanics, poor Native Americans. I just was trying to help an older lady yesterday who is 92 years old. She's in the hospital, and she quite frankly was trying to get ID, and she can't get it. This is a problem that people have of every complexion if they're disadvantaged. She can't get her ID because even her birth certificate is defective. She was born in 1920 something, and so they just. And we need to get this message out, because when you're talking about disproportionate, I'd like to say that figures don't lie, but liars figure. If you're talking about a minority population of 10%, for example, and but the voter suppression laws suppress them to 20%, well, that's 80%. That are not minorities, but and so that 80% needs to understand that they are disenfranchised too. That's the way they divide the masses and the poor people, so that you have a majority population that often votes against their own self-interest because they've been made to believe that the disenfranchisement only affects minorities. Yes, it affects minorities disproportionately, but a 10% minorities that's disproportionately affected to 20% still leaves 80% of the majority. So we need to make that message clear to everybody that it's in the best interest of this country to stop those voter suppression issues. Yes.
You just are a great guest. I know you've got a call you got to go to. And
yes, absolutely. I'm glad you reminded me. I have a Zoom.
On our 5 o'clock calls on Monday, people join. Well, Charles Moreland and me, 5 p.m.
Harvey, I got to go immediately. I'm late. Thank you so much.
Okay, brother.
Bye-bye.
We'll take you up, and we're going to take care. Thanks for being on the show, and I'll talk to you in a while. We got Paul Gunter with us. Paul from the nuclear, from the Beyond Nuclear. Paul Gunter, you with us?
Hello.
Hey, Paul. It's Harvey. How are you?
Good.
Good, good, good. I just want to wrap up. Charles J. Moreland was just with us talking about D.C. statehood. We have major events in D.C., August 27th, 8th, and 9th, and 30th, actually. And one of those events is going to be to deliver solar panels to the White House. We want to make the White House a greenhouse. And Paul Gunter is a leading force and has been for more years than we can say on the anti-nuclear movement. I got arrested with me at Seabrook in 1989, as I recall. And there's a tremendous, unfortunate amount of activity going on with the Biden administration that's not so great. They just gave the green light to a pipeline, I believe, in Minnesota, and they're also talking about bailing out some nuclear power plants. We will certainly be talking about that at our rally on August 30th, but in the meantime, we're doing all we can to stop this madness. Paul Gunter, glad to have you with us. And tell us, please, what is the Biden administration doing here with nuclear bailouts?
Well, thank you, Harvey, for having me on. You know, right now we've got both the Biden administration and Congress moving on essentially federal tax legislation that would be incorporated in to provide tax credits, you know, basically backed by U.S. taxpayers to provide production tax credits to the to nuclear power stations that are part of a merchant fleet. You know, they're not really regulated by state public utility commissions, but so they're out on the competitive market, and they are losers when it comes to competition. Nuclear power historically has been subsidized from the very get-go, and you know, starting with Price-Anderson Act to back the fact that there's not an insurance company in the world that will provide insurance against a nuclear accident, because the while the risk may be low, and you know, we're only getting a nuclear accident every 15, 20 years, which I don't think is low, but even that, the cost and consequence is so high that the insurance company won't cover it. So they've got to have federal insurance. Well, the same is true for competition now on the electricity market. There's legislation now being proposed both by the Senate Democrat Joe Manchin and by on a bill that's being proposed by Maryland Senate Democrat Cardin. That would provide billions of dollars in production tax credits to keep economically failing and materially deteriorating nuclear power stations, to keep them operating. The Cardin bill basically would provide up to $50 billion to nuclear power stations in the United States over the next 10 years. That's one of the major bailouts that we're concerned about right now. And they're going to try, in both these cases, they're going to try to tack it on to the reconciliation bill that's coming up. You know, Biden, in his bipartisan move, you know, again, wrangled about $1 billion worth of tax credits in a bipartisan agreement for aging nuclear power stations, but it really won't pass unless it's there's also passage of the reconciliation bill. And Ron Wyden, the Senate Democrat from Oregon, is working on an energy bill that is right now really strong on renewables, efficiency, and conservation. There's nothing in there right now on bailing out nuclear power, but Manchin is and Cardin are trying to get their bills built into the reconciliation, so that it would, you know, a major double whammy of legislated bailouts would be incorporated to get these aging nuclear power stations to keep them going. And you know what? I guess the big concern is that, you know, Biden has basically said that, you know, they're doing these energy bills in order to create jobs, protect climate, and promote environmental justice. And none of these bills that Manchin or Cardin are proposing, I mean, they're actually counterproductive to jobs, climate, and justice, because they'll take, you know, pouring more money backed by federal taxpayer dollars into aging, decrepit nuclear power stations will not bring new jobs. You're looking for, if we're looking for jobs, climate, and justice, it's renewable energy, energy conservation, and energy efficiency. This is the infrastructure plan that we need to be ramping up. And the more time wasted and resources poured into a bottomless nuclear bucket will divert those resources from the real effective plan where renewables, conservation, and efficiency will take out more carbon. They will remove it quicker. It will be more reliable, certainly more safe, and you will be honoring and defending environmental justice, starting with, you know, uranium mining that has traditionally been on indigenous people's land with timeless pollution, all the way through to nuclear waste, which has no place to go.
Well, it's absolutely insane in this day and age that these people would still be pushing nuclear power. I mean, what is it about Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and Fukushima that they don't understand? And the reality is that we're in the middle, as you well know, Paul Gunter. Paul Gunter is with us from Beyond Nuclear, one of our great activists. Paul, how do people get a hold of you and get a hold of Beyond Nuclear? And tell us also, you're having, I believe, a weekly call on the bailouts. Can you tell us how people can get involved with this?
Well, you can get hold of us through our website primarily, which is beyondnuclear.org. And so I think that's the best way to keep track of the movement here fight this national federalization of nuclear power. Checking out our website is going to be a good way to figure out how to plug in. Next week, we're expecting Friends of the Earth and Nuclear Information and Resource Service to come out with a groundbreaking report that will look at the current nationalization to bail out nuclear power and how you can participate locally and regionally. So that's going to be the best way to coordinate acting locally, thinking globally.
Well, I think, you know, the reality is, I mean, it's so insane. You have 93 reactors in this country, commercial reactors, that are licensed to operate commercially. And all but one of them, Watts Bar, is around 40 years old or more. And some are in their late 30s, some are in their early 40s. And they're all embrittled. They're all badly maintained. Almost all of them are completely uneconomical. And yet the federal government, they don't create any jobs. In fact, they cost jobs because the more power they put into the grid, expensive power, the more they preempt cheaper, cleaner, safer renewables, which create way more jobs. And yet here you have a so-called liberal administration doing what Trump couldn't do, which is to bail out the nuclear industry. I mean, it's outrageous.
And, you know, in fact, it's, as I said, it's going to be counterproductive for dealing with a climate crisis because it will divert resources from the more effective change that we need to be ramping up, not distracting from by again, financing with federal taxpayer dollars. I mean, the concern here is, you know, there are, I think there are now four states in the United States that are through state legislated bailouts of nuclear power in Connecticut, Illinois, New York, and Connecticut, see, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. What the Biden administration right now and Congress are moving towards is nationalizing those state bailouts. So that's why it's really important to confront Biden's effort and Cardin and Booker from New York and Manchin from West Virginia and Carper from Delaware, White House from Rhode Island. It's surprising how the Democratic Party is now championing this bailout. So that's where we need acting locally, thinking globally, and in this sense, stop global warming.
Well, it's just unbelievable. I mean, the nuclear power plants generate huge amounts of heat. I mean, talking about warming the planet, what better way to warm the planet, to overheat, to burn up the planet, than to run 430 commercial atomic reactors all over the world that burn in a radioactive fire at 571 degrees Fahrenheit? I mean, you've got people running around saying that somehow nuclear power fights global warming, which is insane. It heats the planet directly. Hot water, steam, radioactive fires. They do emit carbon. They put huge quantities of radiation into the atmosphere. And I do want to say one thing. If anybody wants to get a real sense of what we're looking at with atomic power, watch the five-part HBO series. I think it was HBO, or was it ABC? I don't remember, but
HBO. Five parts on Chernobyl?
HBO on Chernobyl. So I made a mistake. I have to say, and I say this advisedly, I'm 75 years old. I have never seen anything in the theater or on television, anything that was more disturbing than this series on Chernobyl, which is, 90% true. They made up a few things. There's a character who was a composite, a few other things, but it was very, very accurate. And Paul, I don't know if you were there, but I was at a conference in Kiev in 1996 on the 10th anniversary of the accident with our buddy Michael Marriott and a few other great activists. And so I know a lot more about Chernobyl than I really want to know. And when I saw this series, I made the mistake. It runs about, maybe a total of 8 hours. It's five episodes. I watched it over a three-day period, and I couldn't sleep at night. I mean, this thing was so disturbing, especially knowing what we know about nuclear power. So my suggestion, if anybody wants to know anything about nuclear power, get that series. You might have to pay a couple bucks for it. I don't know. But start around 11 or noon in the morning and watch straight through. Lay out the day, because that's the way you get the full power of the thing. And also, you might lose sleep only one night instead of three. I mean, but absolutely devastating. Paul, I'm sure you've seen it, right?
Oh, yeah. It's riveting. It's riveting. And the acting is excellent.
But all things,
but Harvey, the big lie with nuclear power that, this industry is historically been one of the more imaginative way industries that can re-image itself. First, it was the peaceful atom. Then it was too cheap to meter. And now they're saying that it's the answer to the climate crisis because it's emissions free. And that's the big lie right there. It's not emissions free. There may not be any smokestacks on a nuclear power plant, which is the obvious, but there is throughout the entire nuclear uranium fuel chain, they are emitting carbon emissions, which are many times greater than wind, for example, which has no the wind is the fuel. There is no extractive process for the fuel chain. There is no fuel chain for a wind turbine or a solar panel, like uranium is, which has to be mined, milled, fabricated, and then you wind up with a nuclear waste that has no management plan for thousands of years now. So we've got to get away from not only all these thermal generators like coal and oil, but as you point out, nuclear power is a thermal generator as well, in that it these are the most expensive and dangerous ways to boil water that have ever been conceived. And we can save on through the use of renewable energy, you know, tremendous amounts of water that are, you know, you don't need to cool solar panels with a, you know, 1.5 billion gallons of water a day like you do a typical nuclear power station. Most people don't realize that a nuclear power station is only 33% efficient, meaning that only 33% of the heat generated in the fissioning of uranium actually goes to boiling water that creates steam for electricity. The other 67% has to be removed as a threat, because if you don't, it will melt down the reactor. So they're using tremendous amounts of water to that are either brought in through cooling systems that are also in training fish and sea turtles and all kinds of biota, but also evaporating tremendous amounts of water that are sent out through cooling towers. But that's the that's one of the major advantages of truly emissions-free renewables, and certainly through conservation and the and energy efficiency, these are all truly emissions-free. Whereas with nuclear power, it's just a big lie.
It's horrendous that they can even get away with this with a straight face. We're talking with the great Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear, one of the key anti-nuclear pro-energy, pro-green energy organizations here in the U.S. We will be gathering in Washington, D.C., August 27th, 8th, 9th, and 30th for a national march on D.C. statehood, green jobs and justice. And on the green jobs portion of it on Monday, August 30th, we will be having a roundtable in D.C., and then we are planning to deliver at least one solar panel to the White House to make the White House a greenhouse. As you'll recall, there was a solar panel up there Jimmy Carter put on. That was actually for water, and we were looking for that panel. I think we found it at Greenpeace a long time ago, and now it's disappeared again. But we'll do something. And Paul, we want to deliver to the White House a plan for making the White House the first 100% renewable-based home of a chief of state in the United States. So we're going to be working on the, you know, insulation, heat pumps, batteries in the basement, electric and water panels on the rooftop, and we will present a plan to President Biden to show him exactly how it can be done. So we want you to be a part of that. In terms of the nuclear plants, it's unspeakable to me that these people are continuing with this insanity, and I hope we can stop it as soon as we possibly can. Tell us again about this bailout and
who we need to call and how we need to stop it?
Well, I think the best way would be to come to our website, www.beyondnuclear.org, and particularly another website is the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, NIRS.org, and look for the report that's coming out next week that will be produced by NIRS and Friends of the Earth, and the blueprint for action is going to be in that plan.
Well, we'll certainly look for it, and I'll have them on to talk about it. It's been clear for some time, a long time, that the entire United States could be easily powered with wind, solar batteries, and increased efficiency. And in fact, I love to say this, the old promise, the old BS that they handed around about nuclear power being too cheap to meter has actually come true with wind power. There are places in West Texas now where there is so much wind on the grid that at night you can run your appliances, do your wash, charge up your computer, charge up your cell phones for free because there's so much electricity on the grid, they got to get rid of it. And we have had electricity now in West Texas of all places, wind-driven, that's too cheap to meter. And we're also seeing, finally, the administration has acknowledged the absolute critical importance of the coming of offshore wind. We have windmills now coming in from General Electric that are like two-thirds the height of the Empire State Building, 13 megawatt wind machines. I mean, this is enormous. And this is where we're headed. I just pray, as I'm sure you do, Paul, that we get all these reactors shut before the next one blows up. And if there's been any cautionary tale, it's this condo in Florida that just collapsed. The same thing could be happening at any nuclear power plant as we're speaking. And God forbid it happens again. So, Paul Gunter, thanks so much for being here with us. It's always great to have you on the Solartopia show. We'll look for that report. And there is a weekly Zoom call on bailouts. Can you know about that? How do people get a hold of that?
Well, again, I would suggest that people look for how they can plug in locally and to act globally on a truly sustainable energy policy through the report that's coming out.
Okay, Paul Gunter, thank you so much. Thank you to the crew in New York for another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Next week we will resume broadcasting our grassroots emergency election protection coalition Zoom calls on protecting our democratic rights. Just email me directly if you want to get on with that or with more on energy, solartopia@gmail.com. Thank you, crew in New York. Thank you, Paul Gunter. And we'll see you next week at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.